we can honor our mothers in different ways. In the Vedas, it's described that there are seven mothers. So we may know our material mother that gave us this material body, but in the Vedas, there are seven mothers. Anyone know the seven mothers? Well, the first mother is our material mother and father. So that's our first mother. Any other mothers? Ashish? Huh? The nurse, right? So the nurse is also classified as a mother. Mother, nurse. Yeah. Any others? Huh? Who? Ram? Sita Ram? Well, that's the eighth mother we'll come to just now. Okay, nurse? Anyone else? The Vedas? Yes, the Vedas also classified as mother, definitely. The cow? The cow, classified as a mother. Wife of a Brahmana, classified as a mother. Your mother, definitely. Mother Earth is there. You've got more than seven mothers you're calling, but you're forgetting one more. Well, Radhavani is there, the Supreme Mother. Starts with an S. T. E. P. Stepmother. Yes, stepmother is also classified as mother. And the mother, the wife of a Brahmana, and also the king is classified, the queen is also classified as a mother. And then, as you explained, the Mother Earth is also, Bhumi is also classified as mother. The Vedas are also classified as mother. So, even though the Vedas say there's seven, but there's, because the Vedas are speaking, the Vedas can't say, I'm also a mother. Because that will be self-praise. But in other parts of the book, Vedas, great sages proclaim, even Krishna describes, that through the Vedas, one can understand Krishna. Vedesha saram aham eva vedyo. By the Vedas I am to be known. So the Father, Supreme Father, Krishna, can be known by the Supreme Mother, the Vedas. Now, ultimately, all these mothers have to be respected and honored. But the way we honor them is by also honoring the Supreme Mother, Srimati Radhavani. So Srimati Radhavani, she is the goddess of fortune, the Supreme Mother. So we honor her by chanting her names, chanting the holy names of Krishna, of Radhavani. And it's also described that by honoring Srimati Radhavani, we please Krishna. And the best way to honor and please Srimati Radhavani is by honoring her servants. In spiritual life, this is the science. Krishna says that if you worship me, that's very good. But if you worship those that love me, my servants, then that is greater worship of me. And that's greater than worshipping of me. So if you worship and honor the servants of the servants of the servants of Krishna, then Krishna becomes more pleased than if you directly worship him. Naturally, if you don't worship Krishna, that's bad. But to get Krishna's exceptional mercy, then you honor his servants. So today I thought of sharing some pastimes of one such servant or so. His name is Jayananda Prabhu. He left this world in 1977, a few months before Srila Prabhupada left. And he was classified or titled as ISKCON's first saint. And Srila Prabhupada wrote a letter to him. I'll just read an excerpt of that letter, then we can read the invocation. suicide invocation. Prabhupada writes in a letter to Rameshwar, this is in November, 5th November 1977. Jayananda's death is glorious. It is very good that he had stated, what is the use of such a useless body? So Jayananda had leukemia and he was leaving this world. He was in hospital, he was dying. Better to give it up. He has left his body very wonderfully and he has been transferred to Vaikuntha. So your Prabhupada is acknowledging. Sometimes when devotees leave, then many people inquire, you know, did he go back to the spiritual world, you know, where did he go? So here Prabhupada is acknowledging where Jayananda went. And naturally Prabhupada can do that because he's Trikalagyani, he knows past, present and future. As the pure devotee of Krishna, he can confirm. I've already sent a condolence letter for publication in Back to Godhead. Everyone should follow the example of Jayananda. So now Prabhupada is giving those that are left behind us an instruction. And that instruction is, everyone should follow the example of Jayananda. Okay, so you're going to follow. Okay, but you can only follow the example of Jayananda if you know about him. So there's so many books written about Jayananda, even websites about Jayananda. So he was classified, titled as a saint, not just because, you know, we just wanted to give him the name saint, because he had qualities and attributes of a saint. And by following his example, then we can also get the same destination. Okay? I am very proud that I had such a nice disciple. If possible, Jayananda's picture should be hung in the rut of Lord Jagannath. And in all our temples, a day may be set aside for holding a festival in his honor, just as we do on the disappearance day of other great Vaishnavas. So that day is set aside generally 2 days before Lord Nishinadev's appearance day. So on Wednesday, this Wednesday that went past was the appearance or disappearance of Jayananda. And we had a program in the evening to honor him and glorify him. So this would be an apt way to glorify such a great soul. He's hearing everything we say, just like Srila Prabhupada is. Because these great souls who have returned to the spiritual world, they are conscious. Thank you. They are conscious of the souls that are still struggling in the material world, and they can even give mercy from that platform. And you can imagine if they give mercy from that platform, it is very, very special. And they can give mercy to those who glorify. By glorifying the pure devotees, by glorifying these great souls, then they become pleased, because that is the process in our line, by honoring these great souls. So we'll read some excerpts covering his life, different aspects, and we'll see if we can learn some points, some pointers, if we can take home some advice, some instructions, some inspiration, some encouragement from Jayananda. And in this way we can try to apply it in our own life, so that we can also become exemplary Vaishnavas. So you can repeat the invocation. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So in spiritual life, in fact, we all have an interest in spiritual life. That is why we have come to the temple, we try to apply the process, we're chanting. We have taken to the process of Krishna consciousness because we understand that this is the need for the living entity, for the soul. But on the path of spiritual life, there may be many obstacles. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sasmar, Srila Prabhupada's spiritual master, he said the royal road to the spiritual world is laid with thorns. There are many challenges. And these challenges are different for different devotees. They may ultimately boil down to, you could say, you know, one point or one situation, but they may come up in different degrees or different manifestations. Like Srila Prabhupada said that, you know, if we experience difficulties because of our chanting. So you can ultimately bring everything down to chanting. If we don't chant properly, then we will have obstacles in different ways. But still, in practical terms, you know, there are different situations, different obstacles as them. So we'll see in Jayananda's life, things that he took very seriously in spiritual life that allowed him to overcome these obstacles and move swiftly back to the spiritual world. So one thing which Jayananda took very seriously was the process of Krishna consciousness and many things in the process of Krishna consciousness. And in fact, he had a Krishna book, and on the front jacket of the Krishna book, he had a list of points. So every night, every day when he would read the Krishna book, he would read these points. They're like reminders, which would, you know, push him in a certain direction. So here are some of the points that Jayananda had written down in this Krishna book. As you begin to apply the book's clearly described principles in your life, you quickly experience a new realm of mental pose and experience an inner happiness even in the midst of the most trying circumstances. So this was his first point, that if we read Krishna book and any book of Prabhupada, and we apply these principles in our life. If we don't apply it, then we're not going to really get results. Okay, we have to apply the principles in our life. That is very, very important. Just like you know, many of us know that to be healthy, you need to possibly do two things. What things do you think you have to do to be healthy? Say? Right, eat correctly, have a good diet, proper diet, and exercise. Simple. See? Yeah, she's in time, good, healthy. Now we all know that. Eat properly and exercise. Is it? And how many of you want to and like to be happy, healthy? Yeah, everyone. Nobody wants to be unfit and, you know, lazy and tired. Everybody wants to be healthy. And we know if we eat nicely, proper diet, and exercise, we'll be healthy. So it's not that nobody knows these things. But how come many devotees or many people are not healthy? See, it's not because they don't know. It's because they don't apply. Yeah, application. So Jayananda, he knew, but more important than knowing, he applied. The application is extremely important. Okay, and application, especially in Krishna consciousness, is important. But somebody will say, "Great, I know diet and exercise. So tomorrow I'm going to eat properly, and tomorrow I'm going to do good exercise. Rest of the days, it's okay." No. Every day you have to have the proper diet, and every day you have to have proper exercise. So it's consistent. Similarly, here we have to apply these principles daily. In fact, daily until we go back to the spiritual world. We will have to apply these principles right up to the last breath. Up to the point where you have taken your last breath. Till that point, you should apply these principles of spiritual life. Then he continues, "You worry less and enjoy more. If you do this, then you'll worry less and enjoy more. Your power of concentration, memory, understanding, and creativity will increase." You work more energetically, more confidently and efficiently, as well as relate better to people. And you succeed more easily at whatever you are doing, you try doing. At night, you fall asleep immediately. And in the morning, you will awaken thoroughly refreshed with even less hours sleep than you normally need. Consequently, you will understand the real purpose of your life and your unique role in creation. So this is what he had in front of his Krishna book. It was reminding him of the positive benefits of spiritual life, practical benefits, that if we are healthy in our practice of Krishna consciousness, then we'll experience so many wonderful practical benefits that sometimes in Krishna consciousness we forget. We're waiting for the Vaikuntha plane, that type of benefit. But that will come. But there are many practical benefits. Like in one lecture, Srila Prabhupada said that if someone becomes Krishna conscious, there's wonderful benefits. He'll save so much money. And then Prabhupada goes a little further and says, how will he save so much money? He stops smoking. He stops drinking. He stops eating meat. He stops gambling. So isn't that cost saving? Isn't that saving money? Yeah, just see, so many practical, wonderful. Whereas if you're not, then you have to do these things, and obviously that means you have to spend money, so you have less money. So a simple practical result of Krishna consciousness. Right. So Jayananda, so this devotee, Vishokadas, he's obviously narrating different experiences and exchanges with Jayananda. So this is entitled The First Exchange. Later, I was up on the top of a truck with Jayananda helping him. I felt such warmth from him, like being back with an old friend. I asked him a question. What is the problem? Why can't we just surrender to Krishna? It seems like an easy thing. He gave me this blissful smile, like he was pleased that I asked him a philosophical question. He said, it's not so easy because we are all rascals. I was surprised to hear him say that. I was naive at that time and thought that all the shaven-headed devotees were so pure. I expected to hear him say that surrender wasn't easy for others. Just the others, but he humbly included himself. This was our first exchange. It felt so good to be able to talk with Jayananda. I was thinking that he was such an exceptional person, and yet he would talk with me like an old friend. So here we can see Jayananda's humility, that he included himself also as a rascal. He was never proud, never puffed up. And this is one quality of a saintly person. Because pride is the first step to falling down. If someone is falling on, from a spiritual platform, then that falling condition comes out as pride. As soon as someone is proud, then he begins to fall. And in the material world, because people are proud, then it's very difficult for them to become God conscious. In the Bible, Jesus said, for example, about a wealthy man, because a wealthy man generally is very proud of his money, and he has this great pride. So Jesus described that it's as difficult for a proud person to enter the kingdom of God, just as it's difficult to put an elephant through an eye of a needle. It's very difficult. So pride. Jayananda, he wasn't proud. But he made a very important point that it's difficult for us to go back to the spiritual world because of our conditioning. Even though we have the desire, the soul is willing to go back to the spiritual world, but our conditioning keeps us entangled. And therefore by proper association, we can advance. And Jayananda, he was a wonderful association. Many devotees that describe that were with him, they described that his association was so contagious. He was like a crystal or a touchstone, that when you're in association, you just felt there was no problems. So he was a great touchstone. This is entitled, Certain as Death and Taxes. These little memories are often best. One thing was very certain, just as certain as death and taxes. And that was Jayananda losing his bead bag on a daily basis. So now here's a saintly person, and he also loses his bead bag. I remember this well. It seemed almost every day I would see Jayananda walking around the Rath Yatra site, scratching his head and muttering, "Where's my bead bag?" He would hint that it would be nice if we helped him look for it. Then I would stop what I was doing and help him look, and the bead bag would always be some obscure place, on some beam, in some nook or cranny, in the shadows, or somewhere underneath the canopy of the cart, or somewhere like that. Then Jayananda would touch his bead bag to his forehead and continue chanting his 16 rounds, and we would go back to our tasks. So here's an interesting point. Jayananda would always lose his bead bag, and we would think, well, you know, what's wrong with him? He's always losing his bead bag, you know. But, you know, where would the devotee find his bead bag? You know, under the chariot. Now, would you take your bead bag and chant under the chariot? No. On top of, you know, some plank. You know, if you're going to be working on the chariot, you wouldn't have your bead bag there. The bead bag would be put somewhere safe. But Jayananda had his bead bag everywhere, and he would be chanting with his bead bag. At the same time doing his service. So he was always chanting Krishna's names while doing his service. So here's an interesting episode how Jayananda would deal with difficult people. So this one devotee was with Jayananda, and Jayananda, he was very attached to building and having the Rath Yatra festival. So Jayananda was involved in building the whole chariot, engaging others, and then arranging the whole festival. So one time, this devotee and Jayananda, they would look after the chariot, and they encountered this difficult person. So now this big demon was standing on the sidewalk outside our parking lot, about 20 yards away, and he was throwing garbage bags over the fence and screaming and taunting me. So the devotee was guarding, and here's one person, devotees calling him Richie, who was Ravan's demonic friend. So he was, you know, throwing garbage where the festival site was. So this person was throwing all the garbage over the fence and screaming at the devotee. I was really scared and wondered how he would persuade this demon, obviously in the lowest mode of ignorance, to cease and desist his obnoxious defilement of the sacred arena. I was thinking, why am I guarding Lord Jagannath's cars? Here I am, a scrawny brahmachari. What can I do to guard the Lord's cart from this formidable demon? Then to save the day, Jayananda somehow woke up. So they would sleep on the site. Jayananda woke up. I guess he heard all the rukas. He and I stood there a while, since he was still trying to wake up, and we stared at Marichi wannabe. So that's what the devotee called him, Marichi wannabe, throwing trash bags and defiling the ether with his false exclamations. While I was helpless to solve the problem, Jayananda was empowered by Krishna with diplomatic skill to soothe any wild beast. And so he began to slowly stroll down the sidewalk towards this rascal, very nonchalantly, with a happy-go-lucky smile on his face, and his arms swinging to and fro in a carefree manner. while my teeth were chattering with an ominous trepidation that what was to happen. But I had firm faith in Jayananda and stood in my spot so as not to intimidate the demon anymore and thus escalate the situation. I didn't know if the demon was going to fly into Jayananda's face or what, but I had faith that Jayananda knew what he was doing. So Jayananda, you know, very casually, carefree, just walked towards this person who was very, very aggressive. The demon watched Jayananda coming in his friendly mood, and instead of a possible row that I feared, the Marichi wannabe backed off and made retreat before the friendly yet formidable figure of Jayananda got close. Jayananda always knew just how to handle every confrontation with inimical people, and if the errant soul would have stayed, Jayananda undoubtedly would have befriended and endeared him. Jayananda was that way, always a kind friend to all, even the ruffians. So this was a quality of a great soul, that like Prahlad Maharaj, he doesn't have enemies. People may be his enemies, but he is not anyone's enemy. This is a quality of a great saintly person. And you know, when great souls have that quality, by that quality they are able to overpower the demonic tendencies of people. It may take them a while, but then they will slowly come to their realizations. Just like when Haridas Thakur was being beaten by these two guards, you know, they saw Haridas Thakur as an enemy. But Haridas Thakur, even though he was being beaten, he didn't see these people beating him as his enemies. In fact, he was saying that I deserve this. I'm so sinful, I deserve this punishment. So he obviously was very forgiving. And then when eventually they couldn't kill him, so they exclaimed to him that, you know, if you don't die, we're going to be killed. So then Haridas Thakur said, okay, I'll then leave my body. So then he left his body, and they threw his body in the Ganges water, and then he came back into his body. So then when they saw that how he, you know, showed signs of death, and they threw his body in the Ganges water, river, and then he came back to life, then they could understand that this person cannot be ordinary. He has to be very, very special. And then they obviously begged forgiveness from Haridas Thakur. So this is a quality of a great soul, that you know, he can reduce, or he can fuse the demonic qualities and tendencies in souls just by his purity, by his qualities within his heart. Jayananda performed superhuman activities. Jayananda possessed a great mystic power. Those Rathyatra festivals would have not had happened without Jayananda. He was empowered by Krishna to do superhuman feats that made Rathyatra happen, even when the situation seemed impossible, especially the New York Rathyatra in 1976, which Jayananda considered to be his crowning glory and the perfection of his life. At first, he was not going to pull the cart due to a bad back, but he got swept up into the service and agreed to do it. The New York temple had no money, and Adi Keshavadas said that Prabhupada doesn't trust us, meaning that it was iffy in Srila Prabhupada's mind whether they could do it or not. So here the devotees, you know, they wanted to do Rathyatra, they didn't have the money, and Prabhupada, you know, didn't really know whether they're going to get it together. At first, Jayananda and the devotees drove around and around that area of the town, and some devotees asked, why are we just driving around here all the time? Jayananda was casing out the place. They were on a very low budget, so Jayananda made mental notes of where lumber and stuff just seemed to be lying around. And then they came back in the dead of the night for some discount lumber and parts. Sometimes this is known as a five-finger discount, and in devotee circles, sometimes is known as transcendental repossession. So Jayananda was looking around, what's lying around, what's not been used. Okay, in the evening we will use what is not used for Krishna. As everybody in the world is thinking, this is mine, this is mine. But the reality is that it's all Krishna's property. Always was and always will be. It was like Jayananda was saying in the New York Resident, "My dear inhabitants of the Big Apple, please know that Lord Jagannath already owns everything we see in this town. Actually, he owns everything in the universe. We just forgot. And you may feel reluctant to freely donate. And so we guess that we'll just have to take some transcendental repossessions of a few things for Lord Jagannath's service. And you all benefit from it." Jayananda gathered his material by hook or crook. And sometimes, like his boga shopping, he would persuade some merchants to donate or give big discounts. So here we see, and we can't imitate this, by the way. You try it. See, or you know, just like you may see some flowers in someone's garden, and you may say, well, you know, these flowers are very nice to be offered to Krishna, so let me go steal those flowers. So that's not very good. Because if they catch you, then you know they'll get a bad impression. But if you're Jayananda, then you can do it. There was Ramanujacharya. There's a wonderful pastime of Ramanujacharya. He was also one of the great acharyas in our line. And again, we don't recommend that you do this. But Ramanujacharya, he wanted to build a temple in South India, a huge temple for Lord Vishnu. And they went, you know, door to door, begging people, please give us some donations, we want to build a temple. And nobody wanted to give money to build a temple. So nobody was interested in giving any Lakshmi to build a temple for Vishnu. And we know that Lakshmi, wealth, is called Goddess of Fortune. And she has to be used in the service of Narayan. So Ramanujacharya, he was feeling very sad that, you know, people are so wealthy, you know, and to give, you know, few rupees, they don't want to do that because they think it's all theirs. Don't they understand that the Lord owns all wealth? The Lord is the owner of everything, the proprietor of everything. So then he decided, well, if they don't want to give the wealth, then we will take the wealth from them and build this beautiful temple. So what he did was, he had three disciples. And he called the three disciples. And one disciple all these three disciples had mystic powers. So one disciple, he could stand on your shadow. And if he stood on your shadow, you couldn't move. Okay, so that's the way you get cornered. Right? They would come and stand in the shadow and you got stuck. The other disciple could control your mind. Okay? And the third disciple, he could walk on water. Alright? So Ramanujacharya got his three disciples and he said, okay, we want to build the biggest temple in South India. Not just a small temple. The biggest temple in South India. So they said, no problem, what do we do? So you go to the villages and you bring as much wealth as you can. And what they did was, they engaged some gundas. In India, you get what we call a gunda. They like, what do we call in? The mafias. Yeah, you could say, like the mafias. Yeah. They claim propriety of, you know, over everybody else's, you know. So they'll kill, murder, do whatever they need to do to get your money. So they would obviously steal, you know, kidnap people, kill them, take their wealth, rob the wealth. So then Ramanujacharya tried to engage them also and said, listen, if you want, you can also help us. You bring as much wealth as you want to build this temple, and whatever wealth we get, we share it half. Jai Chintai Guru Hariki. So Ramadu, so the gundas, the mafias, they thought, oh, brilliant idea, quick way to make money. We'll help him get as much wealth as possible, and then we can split the wealth and we'll get half up. So they thought, okay, good deal. So then the gundas were also, you know, robbing the people and doing their normal business and getting all the money. And these three disciples, they went in the village. So they would meet the person, the one disciple would stand on the shadow, so then the person, he can't move. And then the other one would control the mind, he would control the person's mind, and by controlling his mind, he would tell him, actually, you want to give a lot of money for the service of Krishna. So immediately the person would put his hand in his pocket and take out his wallet and give all the money to the devotee, and the devotee would take the money and say, thank you very much, and then they would leave. And this is how they went practically to all the villages, and they collected all this money, and they kept it across the river in a safe place. So they, after they raised all this money, then the Gundas, they came. So then the Gundas, they came to Ramanujacharya and they said, we want our share. Now, you know, it's Krishna's money, you can't really give it to them. So then Ramanujacharya, he said, okay, no problem. My disciple will take you across the boat, across the river. And when you go across, then you can take half the share. Thank you. So they jumped on the boat and went across the river. And this disciple, he somersaulted the boat. And he drowned all of them. And he walked on the water and came back home. So you can see here, Ramanujacharya, you know, he used tactics which we ordinarily wouldn't use. We wouldn't dare to use those. But as an empowered representative, he could do this, and they built this big temple in South India. And this temple for Lord Venkateshwar, this is the biggest temple in South India, most opulent temple. Now obviously the temple gets so much money. People come and practically give money to this temple. So here we see Ramanujacharya, he built this temple by, you know, using mystic powers of his disciples. And here Jayananda, he could see that, you know, he had this desire to build this chariot and they didn't have money. So he went around and, you know, started to see what wasn't used, and then he went to go take that. So we shouldn't obviously imitate or try to go in this direction. As for manpower, Jayananda would grab people off the streets and out of the temples, bums, hippies, lazy devotees, and get them to work day and night, even against their will. So you have to be empowered to do this. Because if they're lazy, how are they going to do service? See, but he would able to, you know, by his ability, by his empowerment, he was able to get these devotees, get these, you know, people off the street that knew nothing about spiritual life to work day and night. And they would be blissful doing this. You just couldn't stop your lazy self from helping Jayananda. It was impossible. Jayananda's enthusiasm was a most powerful and contagious spiritual energy that spread and infected everybody around him. And cars that normally would take many thousands of dollars to build, Jayananda would just transcendently extract all the materials and manpower from the very woodwork of the neighborhood, so to speak. And he would stir his transcendental cauldron with the ladle of his great love for Srila Prabhupada, and poof, there would magically appear out of thin air these wonderful and colorful and majestic carts for Lord Jagannath. In this way, Jayananda pulled off a veritable miracle by building carts on a practically nothing budget. Who could imagine such a feat? But wherever there is Jayananda and his ragtag band of merry street urchins and discount parts and lumber laying about, there will certainly be opulence, victory, and extraordinary power. And then these wonderful, majestic carts will certainly be rolling down the streets of the big cities with thousands of devotees loudly chanting and dancing all around them to bless everyone with the Lord's mercy. So, impossible is a word in Jayananda's dictionary. Then the day before the Rath Yatra parade, a strong wind blew the dome over, and there was a big groaning sound in the metal. The beam snapped, it was broken, and the devotees freaked out and were crying in despair. And so the night before, the whole some wind came, strong wind, and it practically snapped the center metal piece. Some GBCs said that the whole thing was off. There will be no parade. they would have to tell Srila Prabhupada the bad news. The faint-hearted will perceive these kinds of things to be insurmountable, and they would give up and say, it's impossible. But impossible is not a word in Jayananda's dictionary. And the cliché says, when the going gets tough, the tough gets going. In devotee language, it's more like, when Maya attacks the strongest, then the devotees depend even stronger on Krishna. This material world is full of trials and tribulations, and some are like insurmountable oceans. But Krishna says, Mam eva te prapadyante maya metam tarandite. The divine energy of mind consisting of three modes of material nature is difficult to overcome. But those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. Bhagavad Gita 7:14. Here Krishna says, those who surrender unto me can easily cross beyond the ocean of Maya. And when a devotee surrenders to Krishna, then the oceanic difficulties shrink down to the amount of water left in a cow's hoofprint, and easily crosses over. So Adi Keshav said, don't worry, we've got Jayananda. Then Jayananda and his men rolled up their sleeves and went to work all that night. The next day the beam was repaired and the Lord's Jagannath cart was rolling. This was Jayananda's superhuman activity in New York. So Jayananda was very, very enthusiastic, and nothing could stop him. So Jayananda serves the holy name. Jayananda had explicit faith in three holy entities. So this, he had implicit faith in three things. Srinam, the holy name, the words of Srila Prabhupada, and Prasadam. So these were three things that Jayananda had great faith in. So we can imagine he would take firm shelter of the holy name, he would take firm shelter of Srila Prabhupada's words, and he would take firm shelter of Prasad. Okay? So we'll read a few of these, how he had firm faith in the holy name, firm faith in Srila Prabhupada's words, and firm faith in Prasad. This was his means of success in all his activities while giving Krishna consciousness to others. First of all, he would always be serving Prasad to others, giving the mercy. Sometimes it was to the bums on Market Street or patrons of some bar. He was missing at a certain time every day, and devotees wondered where he was, and someone found him cooking prasad for the poor souls at some bar. They were trying to drown their sorrows in some kind of rotten ale, but somehow they got the mercy. Whenever Jayananda was at the temple, he jumped at every chance to serve out Mahaprasadam to the guests, and he would cook breakfast prasad for the sankirtan devotees. Two occasions that I went on incense run with him to Salt Lake City and to Redding, California, he would always cook our meals, and it was always nectar prasadam. Or we would stay at devotees' houses here and there. It seemed he always knew somebody in every city, and he would cook for everyone, and we'd have a program. In the same way, he was always giving the holy name or chanting the holy name, starting a kirtan wherever he could. His impromptu kirtan were famous. I'll talk about that later. So Jayananda, here firstly in terms of prasadam, whenever he got the opportunity to serve prasadam, he would serve prasadam. He would go in the kitchen, cook, and take prasad, go serve it to the people in the bars, serve it to anyone that wanted the mercy. He wouldn't discriminate. So he had this great desire to distribute. And this is one of the qualities of Srimati Radhavani. She likes to cook. In fact, she is the most amazing cook. Srimati Radhavani, Prabhupada describes, she's such an exceptional cook that she never repeats a single prep ever when she's cooking. Every single prep that she cooks is completely new. So this is how exceptional, what an exceptional cook she is. And she's always distributing this prasadam. So Jayananda also would do this. And he, you know, he would be, when he's serving with devotees, then he, the devotees love these impromptu kirtans. So he would, you know, they would be taking prasad, or they would be working on the chariot. All of a sudden, he would just take the cartels and start kirtan. This was Jayananda. He loved kirtan. Jayananda could not sleep. Jayananda was working real hard at a particular Rath Yatra, And what happened was, he somehow stepped on a nail, which went through right through his toe and into his foot, deep. It was very painful that he did not let it stop him. He told me how he limped around for 3 days until the day of the Rath Yatra. Not only was his foot in pain for 3 days, but he did not sleep for those 3 days, working day and night, 24 hours a day for Lord Jagannath. This I also saw in summer of 75. I would sleep a while at the Rath site and wake up any time at night and see Jayananda working on Srila Prabhupada Vyasa's seat on the cart. It took him all night to get it the way he wanted. After all, it was the day before the parade, and Srila Prabhupada would be riding on this cart, and Jayananda could not sleep until it was perfect. His devotion to Srila Prabhupada was boundless. So, Jayananda, here we can see, even in difficult situations, you know, a nail went right through his foot. You know, ordinarily we would stop, take the nail out, go, you know, to the doctor. But Jayananda, this didn't stop Jayananda. You know, he continued with the pain for 3 days, no sleeping, because his devotion for Srila Prabhupada was so overpowering that nothing stopped him from pleasing Srila Prabhupada. This was why he actually also returned to the spiritual world, because he had this great mood of pleasing Srila Prabhupada. And Jayananda was not interested in just being or being recognized by Prabhupada. Like, you know, in the early days, many devotees wanted to be with Prabhupada. They wanted to at least, you know, have some, you know, conversation with Prabhupada, or let Prabhupada, so that they can get Prabhupada's gaze. But Jayananda wasn't interested in this. Jayananda, he was only interested in serving Srila Prabhupada. This was how he established his relationship with Prabhupada. So, in one program, Prabhupada came to the program, and, you know, many devotees that were there, they wanted to get Prabhupada's attention by, you know, being close to Srila Prabhupada in the kirtan, during the lecture, while Prabhupada was walking. But Prabhupada, you know, came off the car, you know, looked down and carried on walking into the hall, got on the Vyasasan, gave his lecture, you know, the kirtan, the lecture, got off the Vyasasan, and then was going out of the hall. Prabhupada didn't notice anyone, didn't really, you know, give attention to anyone. But as Prabhupada was going out of the hall, Prabhupada suddenly turned and went into the kitchen. And there was Jayananda. He was busy cooking the feast. Prabhupada closed the door behind him, spoke for 10 minutes with Jayananda, and then came out and went in to the car. So naturally many of the devotees there, they recognized this. That, just see, we were trying to get some attention from Prabhupada. But Jayananda, he wasn't interested in getting attention. He knew that if you want to get the spiritual master's attention, then the best way to get his attention is to serve him. And serving him doesn't mean to be in front of him to do service so that he can see. Because these great souls, they can see beyond, you know, the physical. They can see far beyond. So Prabhupada could understand that Jayananda had great service attitude. And this was what actually attracted Srila Prabhupada to Jayananda. They one time asked Jayananda, how does one make spiritual advancement? And Jayananda said that, I don't know, I'm too busy serving to understand. So Jayananda was always caught, always engaged in service. So here's an interesting one. Jayananda turns negative to positive. Jayananda would always turn a weird situation into benefit for the other person. This is a real saintly person. That even if somebody does something completely, you know, contradictory, completely detrimental, but a saintly person is able to transform that into something wonderful. So Jayananda had this ability. Like, you know the story of this one, the spiritual master, he had two pots. And he would take these two pots and he would go to the Ganges and he would fill these both pots with some water. And then he would come with these two pots of water and he would use the water for his daily puja. Now, one of these clay water pots had a crack. So you can imagine now he's taking this crack water pot and the other one that's not cracked, filled with water, and now he's walking to his hermitage to do his puja. And by the time he comes to the hermitage, what happened with the water in the cracked pot would have seeped out, and by the time he came to the hermitage there was no water in it. So the pot, the clay pot that had no cracks, every day when the spiritual master would pick up the water and now walk towards his hermitage, the clay pot that had no cracks would start to criticize the clay pot that had cracks. And he would say, oh, just see how useless you are. You got cracks. You can't even hold the water properly. I'm serving better than you. I'm being used for the puja when I go back to the temple, and by the time we go to the temple you have nothing, you're so useless. And it's only the mercy of the spiritual master that he's actually, you know, just taking you, and using you, but actually you're totally useless because the water is all coming out. And this clay pot that's cracked was feeling, oh yes, I'm so fallen, I'm so useless, I'll never be able to serve my spiritual master. But years later, this clay pot that got cracked, he asked the spiritual master, you know, why are you using me every day? Because I'm so useless. I'm cracked. I'm a cracked pot. So, you know, why are you using me? I'm useless. Your other disciple, he's so nice. He's serving you so nice. But I'm completely cracked. So the spiritual master, what you mean? You're so valuable. In fact, you're so valuable, and you're more valuable than my other disciple. So the other disciple was totally surprised. What do you mean he's more valuable? He's cracked. How can he be more valuable? So the spiritual master said, because by your mercy, I can offer every day so many flowers in my puja. So now the cracked pot, he was wondering, what is my spiritual master saying? So the spiritual master explained, see, I knew you cracked. I know you cracked pot. But every day when we were walking, I sowed some seeds on the way to the hermitage. And because you were cracked, what were you doing? Yeah, you were watering where I planted the seeds. And every day when I would go, you would be watering. And what had happened? Those seeds fructified into nice plants, and nice flowers were blooming, and you were watering that every day, and I was offering that flowers to the puja. See? So the cracked pot, he was very happy. That even though he had this this defect, but the spiritual master was so expert to use this defect in his advancement, to make him advance. Prabhupada also had this ability. Prabhupada told his disciples that I'm useless and you're useless, but together we can do something useful. But then, the disciples, they felt, Prabhupada, how can you say useless? You're not useless. You're such an amazing person. So then Prabhupada gave the example of this one person. He was walking and he found a useless stick. And then he was walking a little further, and then he found a useless pumpkin. And then he was walking a little further and he found some useless string. So he took the useless stick and he took the useless pumpkin and he emptied out the useless pumpkin and he dried the pumpkin, and then he put useless stick into the pumpkin and he took the useless string and he tied it to the string in the pumpkin and he made a music instrument. So just see, useless things can also be useful. So here, Jayananda, he was also very expert at taking any difficult situation and transforming it. So let's see what he did. Right, like the fisherman's wharf episode, when the lobster murderers stand people through hot and stinky fish water at the devotees' feet as they went on Harinam. So the devotees, you know, were going on Harinam, and there was a stand, like a table, like a stall, hawker stall, and they were selling lobsters. So the, you know, sometimes people don't like the devotees chanting in the street, so they took this bucket of water and they threw, must have been, you know, with water from the lobsters, so they threw it on the devotees' feet. Now if some people did that to us, what would we have done? Pull the sleeves out and start a war. So let's see what Jayananda did. I would have gotten into a fight with them, like yelling and shaking fists, but Jayananda was in control of his senses and approached them with cookies and said, "Thanks for doing such a nice service of cleaning the sidewalk." And he gave them the sweets. Now, why were they cleaning the how were they cleaning the sidewalks? What did they do? They threw water. But now we would say, but no, they threw dirty water. So they weren't really cleaning the sidewalks. But the Jayananda, he was so transcendental, he had such powerful vision, he didn't worry about that. Yeah? He just said, "Oh, just see, they're throwing water. So very good. They're throwing water, they're cleaning the sidewalk." So he went to go praise them. And naturally this, how did they react? This genuinely affected them. Similarly, he was always trying to give prasad to others, like visitors of the temple, or taking out extra prasad to the streets of the bars and so forth. He was found to be cooking for the drunks in the bars. He was always asking wandering hippies to help his caste, not just to get their labor, but to engage them in the service for their benefit, and knowing that even little service brings transcendental, eternal blessings. So this was Jayananda. He was very, very merciful. He would try to transform any situation for their benefit. Now, Jayananda had great firm faith in prasadam. Okay, so listen to this one. Jayananda worshipped prasadam. And this is what we mean by honoring. When you honor, then that also means you're worshipping. Okay? Like, we don't just eat prasad, but we meant to honor prasad. So Jayananda, here's this episode. When a little prasad spilled on the floor, he would always bend down on all fours and lick it up. He loved to cook, offer, distribute, and eat prasad in a big way. He would always take prasad with him and distribute it, whether he was making a bhogavan or taking a chanting party downtown. He would even say prasad is a special way that made you immediately want to take some. So Jayananda, he loved prasad, and in fact Srila Prabhupada would personally cook for Jayananda, and only for Jayananda. Prabhupada would go into the kitchen and he would cook halva for Jayananda, and then he would call Jayananda, and then he would announce it, and then he would say, "Now eat." And he would feed Jayananda too. You know, Jayananda had enough. And you know, Prabhupada would personally do this for Jayananda. So this was a very powerful relationship they had. Here's one which is quite interesting. We said Jayananda had firm faith in the holy name, in the words of Srila Prabhupada and prasadam. So here's one where Jayananda had firm faith in Prabhupada's words. Jayananda told me one time how back in Frederick Street, temple devotees would sometimes bring their sleeping bags to class. Can you imagine? Devotees slowly coming with a sleeping bag, and some of them crashing. We don't allow that now. So you can imagine. And imagine Prabhupada, he's the, you know, founder acharya, the pure devotee of Krishna, speaking, you know, the most exalted subject matters. And, you know, there are people sleeping. Can you imagine how Prabhupada, you know, he was tolerant. And he had to tolerate his people, just like Jayananda was expert. Srila Prabhupada also was very expert. You know, he knew these people don't have a taste. But at least they come into class. Even though they're coming with a sleeping bag and they're sleeping, at least they're coming to class. It's one step to advancement. One time they asked, they told Srila Prabhupada, "You know, Prabhupada, sometimes, you know, we don't have taste. And when you're speaking about Krishna, then we're falling off to sleep." Yeah, because we don't have a taste. You know, but if it's, you know, bold and beautiful or something, you know, then we get a little excited. But you know, if it's, you know, Krishna katha, then you know, boring, you know, no taste. So then they ask Prabhupada, what should we do? Prabhupada said, you still come for class. But then they ask Prabhupada, but you know, Prabhupada, some devotees, like, they'll always fall to sleep. Are they getting any benefit? You know, so Prabhupada said yes, and then he gave them a story. He said there was one time. One person, he had some stomach problem, and whatever he ate, you know, he would spew out. It would come out. He would never be able to digest anything, and because he couldn't digest anything, whatever he ate came out. He slowly became weaker and weaker and weaker. So then they went, you know, from this doctor to this doctor, and nothing worked because whatever they would take, he would spew out. So eventually they decided to go to an Ayurvedic doctor. So when they came to the Ayurvedic doctor diagnosed him and said, okay, good, he should take ghee. So then, you know, the family members said, but he's going to spew the ghee out anyway. So the Ayurvedic doctor, doesn't matter, you give him the ghee. So he said, okay. So they went home and they gave him ghee. And when he had ghee, what happened? Ghee came out. So they called the doctor and they said, you know what, didn't work, the ghee all came out. So then the doctor said, very good, give him ghee. So they thought, oh, okay, yeah, doesn't make sense. Okay, they gave him more ghee, and the ghee came out, and they phoned him again and said, no, just keep giving him ghee. So they said, okay, so they kept giving him ghee. But day, you know, after day, they kept giving him the ghee, and the ghee kept coming out. But he was getting stronger and stronger and stronger and getting his health back. So they were totally surprised. This is miraculous. How is this working? He's only taking ghee, and the ghee is coming out, but he's getting healthy. So they phoned the doctor and they said, hey, it's working. He said, yeah, I know it's working. They said, but how is it possible? They said, very simple. He's taking the ghee, but the ghee is sticky. It's oily. So little of the ghee gets stuck to the gut. And the rest of the ghee comes out, but because it's oil, it gets stuck on the gut. And that gets digested into the system. So in this way, every day little ghee got stuck and got digested. Gula got stuck and got digested. And this was slowly giving him strength. So Prabhupada said, just like that. Somebody may be sleeping in class. And then, you know, you can't sleep continuously. You know, somebody make like this, or, you know, somebody will make a noise. So immediately, you know, you get up. So then Prabhupada says, so when the person gets up and hears Krishna, and then, you know, Hare Krishna. So as, you know, the speaker is speaking and the person gets up and hears something, that one word is like the ghee that got stuck. And slowly this will give him spiritual strength and until he'll get real taste. Okay. So Jainanda, let's see what he did here. All the devotees bring their sleeping bags. And they'd be sleeping while Jainanda was the only one. So it was quite a crew in the early days. Can you imagine? Everybody's sleeping, and Prabhupada is talking. The spiritual master is speaking, and Jainanda is the only one. Jainanda is the only one listening to Srila Prabhupada. Here is where we can see Jainanda's success in spiritual life. He was eager to hear from his spiritual master. In this way, Jainanda pleased his Gurudev and was empowered to perform extraordinary devotional service. In fact, Prabhupada did the same thing. When Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Samaj would take his disciples on parikram, then the disciples would be gathered and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Samaj would start to speak. And then in the temple, the kamsha would go on, the arati would start. So then all the disciples, they would say, okay, let's go take darshan. And they would go, leave, and they would go take darshan. And Prabhupada would be the only one sitting and listening to his Guru Maharaj. And his Guru Maharaj then commented, they think that you can go see the deity like that. So in this age, we don't see Krishna with our eyes. We see Krishna with our ears. This is how we see Krishna, through our ears. The more we hear about Krishna, then the more we can see Krishna through our ears. So we can see Jainanda, he also followed this example. Alright, so we'll just narrate one more situation and then we'll stop. This was quite a nice situation. Jayananda, he had leukemia, so he was ill, and he was admitted into hospital because, you know, practically he was bedridden. And the devotee went to visit him at the hospital. So then the devotee came into the ward where Jayananda was meant to be, and he found that Jayananda wasn't on the bed. So he was looking around, and then he noticed Jayananda was on the floor. So he thought, you know, something happened, you know. So he asked Jayananda, you know, are you okay? You know, what happened? Did you fall off the bed, or, you know? And he saw, no, Jayananda was okay. He was lying on the on a thin blanket. So then, you know, he noticed, and there was a pillow, and on the pillow, near the pillow, leaning against the pillow, was Prabhupada's photograph. So then the devotee was trying to figure out what's happening here. So he asked Jayananda, you know, what's the photograph of Prabhupada doing there? So then Jayananda, he exclaimed to this devotee that, see, I'm so fallen, I'm so poor, and I never had such a lovely bed in my life. And whatever wonderful thing I get, I cannot use it for my sense gratification. So this bed was so wonderful, I felt guilty to use it, I had to offer it to Prabhupada. So therefore I put this photograph of Prabhupada. And I'm fit to lie on the floor. So this was Jayananda, such great humility and so much enthusiasm. He never criticized any devotees. In fact, Jayananda, you know, criticism wasn't in his consciousness. He would never hear criticism, he would never criticize. And even when a situation warranted criticism, Jayananda wasn't interested. This was Jayananda. If he was with some devotees, and all of a sudden the devotee started to criticize another devotee, Jayananda would just leave. And because, you know, he was such powerful, he was such wonderful association, when he would leave, immediately devotees would understand, oops, did we say the wrong thing? And then they would become attentive that when Jayananda is present, don't say anything bad about anyone. Only speak about Krishna. Only glorify Krishna and his devotees. Here we can get a glimpse of some of the transcendental qualities of Jayananda. His great attachment to prasadam. So we should become attached to prasadam. We should become attached to honoring prasadam. Understanding that prasad is just not food. It is Krishna coming. That is Krishna right in front of you. And the more you realize that, the more you honor it nicely. Then Jayananda was attached to the holy name. He would chant. He would chant his rounds. You know, he would sit up straight, close his eyes, and he would chant loudly, very attentively, very focused. So Jayananda was very, very attentive to chanting his rounds every day. And then he had a wonderful ability to serve. He didn't like to be served, but always tried to find opportunities. And he wasn't like you had to come tell him, Prabhu, please do this. Jayananda would find something or other to do to serve. And if there was no service, what do you think Jayananda was doing? From what we read, if there was no service, what do you think he was doing? Chanting, yes, but more than that. Yeah, he would go in the kitchen, cook, and go out and give some people some prasad. That means he created a service. Because is there people looking for mercy out there? Are there always people wanting mercy? Yeah. So that was what Jayananda would do. And in this way, he got the mercy. And when he left this world, then Srila Prabhupada acknowledged that he went back to the spiritual world. In fact, Prabhupada said he went to the heavenly planets first, get a view first, what's happening there. Because sometimes we're interested, you know, what's happening up in the heavenly planets? I wonder what it's like. So Jayananda, you know, Krishna took him for a tour guide, just to see what's happening in heavenly planets. And then from there, Prabhupada said, then he went to the spiritual world, went back to Vaikuntha. Jayananda Prabhu ki? Right. Any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu. The crackpot, yes. Exceptional. Which you come from? Which area? Far from? Further in Alberton, right?
Yes, Germiston.
Yeah, Germiston. So he comes from Germiston. He doesn't have a car, but he has great determination. And what does he do? He runs to the temple every Sunday. So you can imagine. He has that determination to get the devotees' association. And sometimes in the evening, if there's nobody to go that way to drop him, or they may drop him halfway, then he goes back. So that is wonderful. And sure enough, Srila Prabhupada will reward you for that determination. And people may say, yeah, just see, that crackpot is running. what's wrong with him? Where is he running to? He's running to Krishna's lotus feet. Because that is how we get mercy. We have to be greedy. In fact, Prabhupada said there's only one price that we have to pay, Rupa Goswami says, only one price we have to pay for love of God. And that is greed. We have to be greedy. Greedy for prasad, greedy for chanting the holy name, greedy to get the darshan of the deities, greedy to get all the mercy we can get. And in this way we will actually make advancement. Even though we look crazy, like Crazy Peter. Crazy Peter was a devotee in Boston. He was very crazy. He would sleep, just like imagine if some devotee slept in the pathway here where the staircase is. If one of the devotees staying in the temple was sleeping there, and if you had to come in the temple, what do you think? What thoughts would have gone through your mind? What's wrong with this temple? Where is this temple going to? Like a hotel, these people are sleeping. So Crazy Peter, he would be doing this. So the management of the temple, they thought, this is very bad for public. The congregation are coming and they're seeing this thing. This is very bad. We have to tell Prabhupada, that we need to do something about Crazy Peter. So then Giriraj Maharaj, Sasrup Maharaj, they wrote a letter to Prabhupada that Crazy Peter is just lying in the pathway here, disturbing the congregation, not doing any service. So then Prabhupada responded back. And you know what Prabhupada said? What's the matter? Can't you tolerate? That's all. So now, they couldn't debate with Prabhupada. He's the founder of charity, he's the pure devotee, he's the spiritual master. Yes, Guru Maharaj, whatever you say, but we don't agree, but we have to just follow. And Prabhupada said, what's the matter? You can't tolerate. And they did, they tolerated. Okay, and they tolerated, and in few months, Crazy Peter left himself. He disappeared, so the devotees were very happy. He left the temple, but he didn't leave the movement. He went to another temple, joined the temple, became initiated, and became Kushakrata. Kushakrata Prabhu. And Kushakrata left a few years ago, one of these years. And Kushakrata Prabhu, he became the Sanskrit scholar in ISKCON. One of the most powerful Sanskrit scholars in our movement, and he translated all the previous Acharya's books from Sanskrit, he gave, you know, all the English commentaries. So that was Kushagrata. I think it was last year he left or the year before. So just see, Crazy Peter became Kushagrata, Sanskrit scholar. And because of that service, naturally, he went back to the spiritual world. So therefore we have to be very attentive. I'll share with you one last story and then we'll stop. Just in the mood of Jayananda, how Jayananda wasn't critical, wasn't criticizing. And this is a very powerful quality of a great personality. In one monastery, there were two monasteries. And in this one monastery, you know, they were getting so many visitors and they were making so many followers. And a little down the hill, there was another monastery. And that monastery slowly, were losing people and they weren't really building and they weren't really getting devotees following their path. So they were trying to find out what's wrong. So then one great saintly person was coming past and he happened to come to that monastery. So then they revealed the situation to him and he said, "Oh, don't you know that things will be wonderful, you know why?" So they said, "No." He said, and there were four people left in that monastery. So he said, "Because one of you is the savior. And one of you, being the savior, will save the situation." So they thought, "Oh, you mean one of us is the savior?" So then, obviously, one person thought, "Me? Nah, I don't think I'm the savior. Maybe one of them." And the other persons were thinking, "Me? I don't think I'm the savior, but maybe one of them." So now, when they all thought that one of us is the savior, how do you think they started dealing with each other? Because anybody could be the savior, and you don't offend the savior. So they started dealing very respectfully and lovingly with each other because you may be offending the savior. And in this way, just by that consciousness, change of consciousness, they started attracting so many people. One by one, so many people started attracting and started flourishing. And the monastery down the road started losing all the people and wondering what's happening. Because there they started to fight, and here the culture of love, sharing, and understanding that somebody here may be a very great personality. And Prabhupada made the same point in one class. Because Prabhupada was saying during Kirtan, in Los Angeles, Prabhupada was saying, when we have Kirtan, we may be dancing, but do you know that the demigods also come? And especially when Prabhupada was present, Lord Shiva would be in the Kirtan, Lord Brahma would be in the Kirtan, the demigods would be in the Kirtan. In fact, one time during the Kirtan, Prabhupada, there was Kirtan and Prabhupada started to laugh. So the devotees were surprised, why is Prabhupada laughing? So then later on they asked Prabhupada, "Why are you like, Prabhupada wasn't laughing, he was like giggling. Like a child giggles, because something, when they, like when if you put chewing gum on your seat, and then somebody sits, and the kids know that, oh yeah, we put chewing gum, and now it's stuck, and the kids will start to giggle." So Prabhupada started to laugh like that. So the devotees, they asked Prabhupada, "Why are you giggling, why are you laughing?" Prabhupada says, "No, Narada Muni and all the demigods are laughing at how you're dancing." Because sometimes Westerners, they would have a funny style of dancing, so he says all the demigods, they laughing. And in Los Angeles temple, Prabhupada told them that they must, just like we have on the, we have the photographs, and you'll find in some temples, we have like in Durban temple, we have the asan for Prabhupada and the asan for Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati. So Prabhupada told them in the temple they must have another asan for Narada Muni, because Narada Muni comes every day to the temple. So they must have asked them for Narada Muni. So like that the demigods may also appear. So then Prabhupada was making the point, in the Bhagavatam class, that the demigods, they taking birth in our movement to take part in Krishna consciousness. So then Prabhupada says, so don't be surprised that next to you may be a very, very exalted demigod. And if you offend him, be very bad for your spiritual life. So just be careful. Don't know who's sitting next to you. Maybe Narada Muni, disguised. Maybe some great demigod. Okay. So in this way, when we have that consciousness, then we can follow in Jayananda's footsteps and try to share the culture of love. In this way we can also, and this is real Mother's Day, this is what Radhavani does. Radhavani, she only wants to serve the devotees and bring the devotees to Krishna. So this was the mood of Jayananda. So let us stop there, we'll have Guru Puja and then we'll take Prasad. Shiva Gaur Bhavaki, Jayananda Prabhu ki, Jayananda Prabhu ki, Jayananda Prabhu ki.